Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and these are our interviews with the writer, director, and composer for The Harder They Fall, James Samuel, and Will Mavity's interview with the costume designer, Antoinette Massam.
What the hell are you doing? I ain't nowhere to board a train, you damn stupid nigga!
You know, you might could have said nincompoop.
We ain't no nincompoop. Here I come. Here I come. Open it.
I'm gonna play for you our first tune. It's called Let's Start What We Have Come Into the Room to Do. Right on. Here goes.
One, two, three.
James, how are you, man?
I'm good, my brother. How you doing?
Doing really well. You know, it's that time of the year where things are starting to sort of settle, like calm before the storm, if you will, because we have just like a flurry of end of year awards, televised stuff, and everything just coming now, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's, you know, obviously I've never been here before. So this is
That's what I was going to ask you. Like, what is it like going through all of this for the first time on your first feature length film? I imagine it must feel very exciting, as well as kind of pummeling, I guess, because there's so much happening all at once.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, there's always so much happening at once because it's like life, and that's a fun thing, but it's super exciting. It's really gratifying to have something that only you believed in the entire world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're working on for so long, no one was seemingly listening and stuff, and then you get to a place where, okay, other people are listening and other people want to collaborate and get this thing done, and then you do that, and then the world is watching, and then the world is listening, and then you're meeting all of these amazing people that are in tune mm-hmm. with what it is you've done, and the storytelling language that you speak is actually an awesome thing. So for me, it's just exciting. Like, there's more excitement on more excitement.
That's awesome, man. I mean, yeah. So going into all these individual meetings with just this all-star cast, I love the cast in this movie so much.
Thank you.
It's your first film. It's your first screenplay. Everything first. What is the pitch? What are you telling them to get them to say, trust me, even though I haven't done this before?
I suppose it was the process of making the film was different, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're not really pitching. Like, me and Idris have known each other for over 15 years. And from as long as we know each other from the hood in London, from just running around the streets. So as long as I've known Idris, we've been talking about this movie, literally years, right? We've always been talking about, you know, when I do the Western and Driss and da, 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 da. So there's no version of this film without Idris Elba, which is a big thing. And then Jay-Z and myself have known each other since, I think, 2009. We've been collaborating since 2010.
Yeah.
And when we've been Jay Electronica's album together, we've been, then we did The Great Gatsby and all that. And literally, that entire time, we've been talking about a Western. We just needed to let the world catch up. When I had the idea for The Harder They Fall, Netflix was sending DVDs to my house, mm-hmm. right? They weren't even a streaming company at that
sure,
point.
Yeah.
Right? They would send DVDs, and they had blocked my account like 1,000 times because I never sent those DVDs back. So literally, so I'll just change the name and this and that, and they would then use different details and then get more DVDs. I mean, the ends justifies the means.
Yeah.
And then they ended up making my movie. So I've always had good fortune when it comes to Netflix.
That's awesome.
As long as Jay and myself have known each other, we've been speaking about this movie. So it's almost like the world had to catch up, and the environment and just everything else, I suppose. Because I was always saying the same thing. And then I was fortunate when it came to actors. I had shot a short film 10 years ago
mm-hmm.
called They Die by Dawn. is related to it in that they're both Westerns and they use a lot of the same historical characters. The stories are entirely different. They're two different films, but I had a great cast.
Isn't that the name of the studio album as well, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, They Die by Dawn and Other Short Stories.
Right, yeah.
And in the short film, I had like Michael K. Williams, Bokeem Woodbine, Nate Parker, Rosario Dawson, Erykah Badu, Jesse Williams, Harry Lennox, Roger Guinevere-Smith, Giancarlo Esposito. I had like the most amazing cast for a short film. And then I used that. I was screening. It was almost like a proof of concept. And I'm showing that to people. And pretty much everyone that I was speaking to was coming on board. And then the studio came on board, Netflix. And when I met Netflix, it wasn't Scott Stuber's exact words were, "This is not a pitch meeting. We're making your movie."
Nice.
Wow. Things just got mad real, mad quick. And Nintendo, Legenda came on board. And, you know, we just made it. It didn't seem like it. All those years went past. It was literally from idea, from conception to creation, 15 years. But from actual graft, skin in the game, 10 years. But it didn't seem like 10 years.
Yeah.
And just pretty much going forward. And doing what it is you set out to do, because I love the journey of getting it done. That's life. Mm-hmm. That's the life. When you get it done, you give birth to a child. And when a child is born, that's amazing.
Yeah.
But the making of the child was equally as enjoyable, so to speak. And so you're going through that process and you're making your child. And that's what turns a lot of people off, but that's what turns me on. Coming from the area I came from, I'm not supposed to be doing this type of thing, or maybe I am. Mm-hmm. But first-time filmmaker doesn't set out to make a huge budget Western. It's like making things super difficult for yourself. But for me, it was awesome.
Yeah. I imagine that this is wholly ingrained in you because you're an artist at the end of the day. You put your stamp on the world of music. Now you're making your mark in the world of film. I'm curious to know, what are the similarities in how you approach both art forms and what are the dissimilarities?
Okay. I would say, Matthew, there are literally no dissimilarities. Film and music are literally the exact same thing, which is why I always say composers are hired too late. A composer should be hired from script stage, right? Because a composer is telling the story with you and the melody could dictate where you place the camera.
Sure.
Right. Motif could dictate how you shoot a conversation, just in the motif, knowing the motif prior to shooting. I don't understand how that much wealth of information cannot do anything but help the director. The movie shouldn't be shot. And I believe when you speak to other composers, my composer friends, it's quite hindering when the movie is shot and now the composer has to work to the movie. Mm-hmm. The composer can work to the script. And so for me, a script and a song are the same. It's three acts roughly in a script, right? You look at your beginning, your middle, your end. A song has three verses. It's three acts. Verse one, verse two in the middle, right? Then they're pretty much exactly the same and they all work hand in hand in my head. So when I'm writing a screenplay, I'm listening, I speak back the words and then I start composing the score. From the words, from the rhythm of the words and finding the motifs. And then when you cast, things change. You hire an actor, you bring on board an actor. The actor has his or her own nuances and that informs the melody even more than what you had. So it's really all the same thing. It's all like water. And it's all, they all kind of, I can't find any dissimilarities between the creation, I can't find any similarities between the creation of film and the creation of music. It's just art.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably why, you know, this has been such an impressive debut and you've just so seamlessly worked your way in. You know, when I watched this, I was very impressed by the technical skill, the rhythm of the movie, as you're mentioning, and how much it does play to the music. And your music has, as of today, been shortlisted both for the score and for the song by the Academy. So people are recognizing the talent and the work that you have done there. And it's really, really just I think, awesome to see, especially because of the type of story that is being told. This feels like something fresh and something new, even though it's based on people who, as your title says in the beginning, people that really existed. So I just love the fresh take that you brought to this genre that we've seen done so many times before. And, you know, I got to ask, I'm curious about this one. I was at the Gotham Awards. You made a speech there kind of alluding to, I'm not going to name the film or the filmmaker, but another Black Western movie that used the N-word a lot, was much, probably very, very violent, and so on and so forth. And I'm curious to know if your film was acting as any kind of statement in retaliation to that particular film. I don't want to name it necessarily, well, but I think you know what I'm talking about.
I would say the film you're talking about is Django Unchained, right? I would say no. Like, I made They Die by Dawn.
Yeah.
I was referring to that movie at the Gotham Awards, but I made They Die by Dawn in 2012.
Yeah.
We shot, and he made Django in 2012. We shot our movies, not only the exact same time, in the exact same place, Melody Ranch Studios. I needed to book it. That production was going in. So they shot for, can't remember, like a week there. And as soon as they moved down to, was it New Orleans somewhere, Louisiana somewhere? And I moved in and I shot They Die by Dawn. They Die by Dawn was a 4-day shoot, but we shot at the same time. So Django wasn't even out when I was talking about like Black people in the whole West. But you know, for Django, obviously it was promoted as Black Western, but it's not a Black Western. There's no Black cowboys in there. They're all slaves. And they, you know, and there's one slave who turns cowboy. So not really. So I was. But what I was on, the Hard Day Fall is almost testament or a statement to all of the history of Hollywood, Django included, right? That just because you show Black people in the Old West or in a period piece, it doesn't mean we have to be subservient or that has to be the story. Or just because you show Black people in let's say, the Old West, or women, right? In the Old West, doesn't mean you have to call us the N-word like over 100 times in your movie. Like it at some point becomes like we as people of color and women of all colors, when we're watching, there's a reason why people think they don't like Westerns, right? It's because of the narrow depiction of that place and time. A Western is literally just the time and place it's shot, right? It's just the geographical location and the time. But there's a reason why people think they don't like them, because of the narrow scope in which we've been given them. Whereas if you remove that, you don't hear the N-word in The Harder They Fall once.
No, you don't.
No character says it. Black people are just Black people. The term cowboys was for people of color. Cowhands, white folks would call what? Cowhands. So it's almost like I'm speaking to all of those films that just show us in such a derogatory light, and not just with use of the N-word, but just with remove Django, but just in the really derogatory, inhuman way we're shown, even the way Mexicans are shown in the Old West, and the way Native Americans are shown. At no point in time did Native Americans circle a wagon with a white family inside the wagon. This stuff didn't happen, just Hollywood's depiction. So it's almost like The Harder They Fall kind of takes a baseball bat to all of it.
I think that's part of the reason why it's such a powerful watch. It's almost like you're reclaiming cinema back in a way, and stories for these characters, these people.
Yeah.
And I really, really love the statement that is making. My final question before we go here, because I know we got to run, is, you know, this was an all Black Western, as you mentioned before. And a lot of people are saying that it's depiction, the way that it's presented, as you eloquently just said, it is something that is kind of a statement, and it is taking Hollywood history to task here. What other genre would you like to see that applied to?
I mean, all genres, really.
Good answer.
all genres. Women just get like cast aside in pretty much all genres, but especially period pieces. I don't understand why a period piece has to show women subservient, right? In all colors, right? if we look at the Western, imagine how dehydrated a genre will be when you just like cast women to the side of people of all color. That's the old West. But I think all genres really, all genres. That's why we loved Star Wars so much. The minute Star Wars begins, you see this lady, big headphones, Princess Leia, getting rude to Peter Cushing, Grand Moff Tarkin with Darth Vader. Like, she really, this is why we love that film. She drives the story. Help us, Obi-Wan. You're our only hope. Like, who is this lady? We want, for me, pretty much all genres, I think, people of color and women and just what our society looks like in real life should be applied to all genres, and we'll have a much better go at it. So my next movie, you'll see what I'm talking about even more.
Love it. You know what I mean? Love it. Well, thank you so much. I think as long as there are artists like you leading the way, we'll see the cultural landscape of cinema continue to change for the better with these amazing stories. So I thank you very much for your time today, James, and I wish you the best of luck with the Harder They Fall the rest of this award season.
Thank you so much, my brother. Thank you so much, man. All right, man.
See you soon. Take care.
Peace.
You do know how to make a grand entrance.
I know who you are. Angel who hunts down those who trespass against him with no mercy.
You miss me?
Admit it. I'm lighting it with the blam blams.
Let's talk about this one, because I saw this movie in October and I haven't stopped thinking about the costumes since then.
Thank you. You know, I mean, there's people who love it and get it and those who don't. You know, it depends on how much of a purist you are, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, talk to me about kind of how your conversations started initially with James about like what kind of a film this was going to be, kind of stylized, kind of period accurate. You know, how did you get to the happy medium that this film has?
Well, my agents shared this story with me about this script and said, it's a Western, it's an all-Black cast, but more importantly, we think you're going to be interested because of the people involved. And then they told me it was James Samuel and Jay-Z. I'd not heard of James Samuel, and I looked him up and realized, oh, James Samuel of the Bullets. James Samuel, who worked with Jay-Z on The Great Gatsby. James Samuel, who has done Till Dawn is Dead, or God, you know what I'm trying to say.
I think it's They Die by Dawn.
Death by Dawn. And also looking at his own work, looking at his music videos, looking at that movie, I'm like, this is a filmmaker. So they said, and that's, they know me. They know I love a challenge. They know I love something different. And immediately it's like, I'm interested. So they tracked it for me. And it came up about 9 months to a year later. And they said, we've submitted you for this. And there's some heavy players interested. But I was able to get an interview. And at that interview, maybe knowing his backstory, knowing he's a musician, knowing that he's done music videos, looking at him online and seeing that this man loves fashion, knowing Jay-Z's involved, I didn't just bring period reference of the time. I brought contemporary visuals, fashion visuals, music video visuals. And that's when he's like, okay, you get it. Because he was not interested in making a Western like what we've seen before or recently. And it's not even so much a Western, because, I mean, to quote him, he did say he wasn't making a dusty, dirty cowboy movie. He also was very clear about the type of period film he wasn't interested in doing. He wanted something that was relatable, that today's audience, that the kids would relate to. And he spoke about, as a kid, falling in love with Sergio Leone films. Is that right? Sergio Leone, at least. Oh my God, it's the editing on this one. I'm sorry.
Don't worry.
You know, it's not too late here. It's only 7:30 p.m., but it's been a long day. But yeah, that they influenced him. And those were movies were made in the 70s, you know, right. 60s and 70s. So if this movie is made now, how would it look? And that's what I was thinking about when I was doing my research and putting together my mood boards. And it's not to say it happened right off the top. You know, the first interview is like, oh my God, you're Jamaican. I love that. Because he has a love, his wife is Jamaican and he knows the culture and the music. And he grew up in England, in Brixton. So he knows that sound that you hear in the street.
Right.
And we initially connected on the music and then just started going riffing and going back and forth about the looks and the layers. And he sent me back to like come back with more. And he kept pushing me to think out of the box. And it was great because when I look at the visuals now, we see them in the movie. Like those, that was our Bible from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And he had his own references as well. So the fact that we had similar references was another way we connected. He's like, oh my God. And then he'd pick up his mug and look at this, I have the same one. And so I got in really early. I was one of the first people hired. So we were able to spend some really amazing time together. So I know I kind of went off on a tangent, but yeah, that was the beginning. It started really early.
Well, let me ask you this. You said you and him had some of the same references you brought. So other than obviously his love for Sergio Leone, what did you both bring as your references? You don't have to list them all, obviously.
Pardon me?
You don't have to list them all, obviously, just a couple notable ones.
You know, there were some Western-inspired fashion references that we both had, like British Vogue, Italian Vogue. We both had some similar references. We both had Oswald Boateng's Harlem Renaissance collection, which was very much a huge inspiration for me for this film. And he ended up making some of Idris Elba's costumes. Mm. But the color saturations that he used in his collection and in his stills and his promo and the fashion show, I had them in my mood boards. And James also used some of the same images. And there was a artist that we both worked with that the name has slipped me, but I used some of their paintings. He's an artist that's done several time covers and of people, Black people in different walks of life. And I just love the color palette that was used and the references. And I mean, there's a shot of Regina King on a horse that we literally took right off the painting. You know, really? That first shot that you see of her sitting, straddling the
train tracks. Oh yeah, that's a great shot.
I'm Googling it now because I'm mad at myself that my brain is fried and I did not, I'm not remembering this artist's name, but it will come back to me because it was an inspiration for both of us. And, you know, and I think it's important to share that person's name. So if I can, I will remember and tell you.
Okay. Well, while you're looking for that, I am curious, you know, a lot of these people were real historical figures. Mm-hmm. I know James didn't want to do like, quote unquote, a dusty old cowboy movie, but did the two of you opt to try and recreate the look that was captured of some of these real life figures in their outfits, or did you just decide to build anew completely?
No, I mean, I researched them, I looked at them, and then I parked them because we weren't recreating their stories. None of these people's paths actually crossed.
Right.
And some of them were not even alive at the same times. Using their names is James's way of paying homage to these people, to show and educate and say they existed.
Yeah.
Why are we not talking about them now? Why did we not see them in all these Westerns? I didn't know about these people before, you know? Yeah. And when I looked at them, I think instinctively it was easy to see why Nat Love was cast. Jonathan Majors invokes that swagger, that, you know, that strength, that cockiness that you literally see coming off the page with the original Nat Love. But I didn't dress them the same.
Yeah.
I think it, you know, there's tones of arrogance. I don't know if the words is arrogance. I mean, James uses the word swagger a lot. And there was definitely a lot of swagger in Nat Love's presence, even the way he held his head and the way his body, the way his stance in his pictures. The only thing that I carried over from the original, an original person, is for Bass Reeves, Delroy Lindo really liked the bow tie.
Mm.
And the real Bass Reeves, it was a signature for him to wear the bow tie. He only wore bow tie. So we incorporated that in his look. But that's the only person. I mean, Cuffy's, the real Cuffy, was a soldier.
Mm.
So no, there was no overlaps, no duplicating. I researched them and then I moved on.
Did you want to, in kind of creating the materials for these costumes, did you decide to go modern, or were you looking for fabrics that would have existed in the 1800s? Tell me a little bit about the fabrics and all these.
The silhouette was the only thing that was important for me to have be somewhat accurate. It was my base. I used the Victorian era between 1870 and 1890 as a base for the silhouette. The woman's shape was very lean and high-necked and very straight. And I mean, you did see that, but I also tried to open it up, which was my way of modernizing the look a little bit and sleek it out so that there wasn't the big bustle at the back, that there wasn't the constricted neckline that you see in Victorian times. And then ways in which I also modernized it was with the type of fabrics. I mean, Idris Elba's pinstripe suit had a bit of refinement, had a little bit more, you know, modern, super fine one, you know, Super 100 feel to it than if I'd done a more textured, woolier pinstripe, which would have been more true to the period. You know, when people say that I stylized, they are very much, denim was very much existed at that time, and how I then used it and the colors that I used it is how I was able, I think, to modernize it. And it wasn't that I made it a point to say, this is how I'm going to make it modern. I just instinctively was attracted to certain colors or certain fabrics, or wanting to make sure I had enough indigo because it was important that that was a base color for me as compared to black. And I just did it organically, if that makes sense. You know, yeah. It's not like, okay, this is too period accurate, let me make it modern. It's just when in designing, I knew that the lines were going to be a little leaner, which would be much more relatable than if I did it as authentically period as one would think.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You know, you mentioned having indigo and the importance of certain colors and dyes. I thought it was interesting that James sets a big part of the final battle in a dyeing workshop for fabrics. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about that decision making and your involvement in that as well.
Other than being scared, I'm like, don't fall in the vat of dye, please. They decided that that shoot, that set was created towards the end. And it was just really important. Like, they were trying to decide how they were going to do the fight and where, but more importantly, how do we cement and show this town and its origins and what made it prosperous? And making it a textile town was amazing for me, because then it gave validity to the colors and the sumptuous fabrics we used, because we milled in the town, we dyed in the town. That was a source of income for many of the merchants. If they were not involved in the textile industry in a manufacturing front, they were selling dry goods, or they were trading. I mean, we had a bank in that town, a Black town. So when I was thinking about color palette, and Martin Wist was thinking about color palette, we were able to play off the fact that not only was it a town that was industrious and had a main source of economy and income for the families that lived there, we could use the color as a base and a template because it existed. Do you know what I mean? Adding the dyes to paint, adding the dyes to textiles. So you see the difference, the contrast between the two cities. I'm not talking the Maysville, I'm talking Douglastown. Douglastown is much warmer, more organic, and, you know, a little
earthy. Is Maysville the white town?
The white town, yeah.
That gag killed me.
Yeah, that was funny. The white town.
I was also curious, you know, the Old West was dirty, and obviously James didn't want to do, quote unquote, a dusty, dirty cowboy movie. But did you work to kind of age and weather the clothes a little bit still? Tell me about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I did it where it was needed. I mean, the only person's costume that I didn't age in some way was the new pieces that Idris Elba wears. His character, Rufus Buck. Because the storyline, which, you know, with editing hits the floor, was this man arrived in town. Technically, there was a change in between, but it didn't happen. He arrived in town and went straight into being fitted, you know, shaved, haircut, barber, and then fitted by a tailor for new clothes. So his clothes were literally brand spanking new. Mm-hmm. And if you notice, he didn't leave the hotel he lived in, the mansion, the mayor's mansion. He never left it.
Yeah.
So there was no place for his clothes to get broken down and dirty. But we had a full dye shop, Age of Dyers. I mean, all of the leather coats, all of the, you know, Trudy's, the bottom of her skirts, there's like levels of dust at the bottom where she walked. And that's the thing that, you know, when I'm listening to some of the feedback and the reviews, that they look like they just came out of a bag. Well, Trudy's in her saloon, in her dress. Why would she be dirty?
Right.
You know?
She's not wandering around in the muck all the time.
Exactly. And then you look at Nat Love. His jacket and his clothes look like he's been in them. They just don't look dirty, which was important for James that he not be dirty. His arriving in Douglastown in that blue shirt and that jacket and jeans, he's come in a Corton. These are his best clothes. The clothes he had that he arrived in were to court Mary.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and he's making a statement. So of course it's going to look nice. It's not going to show up in rags.
Exactly. You know? So, I mean, I try to have the clothes where necessary look like they belonged on people. And there was a level of aging to make it real, but not to make it dirty.
Sure. Last question is, you know, I think this production got shut down a couple times because of COVID. Mm-hmm. So tell me about having to get close and costume people and fit people repeatedly during a pandemic.
The fact that I'm here talking to you is a miracle. It was really hard. We were in New Mexico and the first shutdown was just before the pandemic and just before the world shut down per se. Mm-hmm. And we shut down the day before camera and we were gearing up with the principal cast we had. But then when we came back, we didn't have some of those casts. Mm. So that was fast and dirty to get new people ready for camera in a very short time. But we also didn't have the resources we had prior. So I'm in a town that was on lockdown that the only retail store that was open to me was Walmart and Target. And if I couldn't find a vendor, like a vintage vendor that was able to pull and let us take it out the door or meet at the door, I was very blessed to have the Santa Fe Opera that allowed us in to rent from them and to buy fabric and notions. I couldn't even buy zippers or needles. If I couldn't ship it in by Amazon, which I'm doing a period movie, if I couldn't get it by Amazon because all the rental houses were closed. And then when they were opened with limitations. Mm. So it was really, really, really challenging. I had to get creative. You know, buying contemporary shirts. We shipped from London because we could ship in. Yeah. I mean, it was a challenge. I'm not going to lie.
It sounds like it. Okay. Yeah. I said that was the last question, but I got one more. I loved all the hats in this. Tell me about all the distinctive hats.
Oh my God. That was fun. That was one of the, I worked with so many amazing hat artisans that Baron Hats in Los Angeles. Stetson did some great work for us, sent us a lot of great hats. The hat that Idris Elba wears is Stetson. Baron Hats made the hat for Nat Love and Mary and Bass Reeves. We found a great hat place in, and I mean, it's literally a store that has been around for decades and they make custom hats there, that made a hat for Dion Cole's character, Wiley Escrow, in a day. And then I found another local guy, Stealth Collection, that did Cuffy's hat. So we were able, as we went along, because all the hats were custom.
Mm-hmm.
because one, it needed to be right for that character, but also I needed multiples. This is an action movie.
Oh my God.
So, I mean, we rented bins and bins and bins of hats, but for the leads, the majority of the leads, I'd say 95% of the lead actors had custom hats.
Oh, that's so cool. Did they get to keep their hats after?
Well, I know one actor who went home in his entire costume. So he has everything from the hat down to the boots.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I'm sure you know who that is.
I have a couple guesses. Yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk. This is fantastic and it's really great work. I'm glad the film wasn't shut down. I'm glad we got to see it. You know, that I know it was a Herculean effort on you guys' part. So,
well, thank you so much. I appreciate that you did watch it and that you liked it and that you saw the costumes, especially all the hard work. I couldn't have done it. I had an amazing team that we stuck it out and we made it happen. We had to get really creative to do this movie.
It sounds like it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, well, we didn't make it in Los Angeles or New York, you know,
that's for sure.
Yeah. Well,
get some sleep too. I know it's getting late there. So thank you for staying up to talk to me too.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. And take care.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to my interview with the writer, director, and composer for The Harder They Fall, James Samuel, and Will Mavity's interview with the costume designer, Antoinette Messem, here on the Next Best Picture podcast. The Harder They Fall is currently streaming on Netflix and is up for your consideration in all categories at this year's Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Original Score, Best Original Song, and Best Costume Design. You have been listening to the Next Best Picture podcast. We are proud to be part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, and you can subscribe to us anywhere where you subscribe to podcasts. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate your feedback and your support, which you can also lend on over at Patreon. For $1 minimum a month, you'll get some exclusive podcast content from us. Thank you so much for listening, as always, and we shall see you all next time.
History is complicated. The story of human progress is long, messy, and riddled with controversies big and small. On Conflicted, we dive headfirst into history's most infamous events and contentious figures. We try and untangle the good from the bad, the fact from the fiction, and the monsters from the misunderstood. Was Genghis Khan a murderous butcher or a civic pioneer? Did the Allied powers go too far in firebombing the German city of Dresden at the twilight of World War II? And how did the Marquis de Sade acquire such a sinister reputation? And was any of it true? These are just a few of the tough questions we wrestle with and investigate on Conflicted. So if you love history or just enjoy a good story, please join me, your host, Zach Cornwell, for a fascinating new topic each and every month. Conflicted, a history podcast, is available on Spotify, Apple, or wherever else you get your podcasts. I hope to see you soon.